Today's segment of the McGirt Show is here. Credit Repair Education Services, celebrating 18 years of renewing, rebuilding, and restoring consumers' credit all over the nation. You can visit them at youtube.com, The McGirt, their free consumer advocacy page at facebook.com/groups/HGLaw. Their email is crestservices@outlook.com. Their local number is 910-813-8525. They're A-plus rated by the Better Business Bureau. And if you have credit issues, you'll be glad you contacted them. Renew, rebuild, and restore your credit today. Give them a call.
This is Bob McGirt, host of the McGirt Show on Blog Talk Radio. And we are so happy to have with us today all of our listeners. You can tune in each week at area code 619-924-0898. We're so happy for all of our followers, corporate as well as personal. You can check us out on blogtalkradio.com/TheMcGirt and Instagram, The McGirt Show, as well as youtube.com/TheMcGirt and Facebook, Bobby Dale McGirt. We are so happy to have with us today an awesome LGBT author, Mr. Tommy McNeil from Galveston, Texas. He is an author of a book called Two Left Shoes. It is a feast of relevant social issues in the midst of a twisted love triangle disguised as an erotic thriller, and it takes a whirlwind tour through the mind and author of Mr. Tommy McNeil, if you dare, as he weaves a captivating story around the lives of ordinary Galvestonians and their encounters with homophobia, bullying, teen suicide, domestic violence, drug addiction, HIV in the heterosexual community, and more. You may laugh, you may cry, you may cheer for the underdog or hate, but you'll never be bored. And Mr. Tommy McNeil, we want to welcome you, and we thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to be a guest on the McGirt Show and share this amazing journey through your book.
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank you for this great honor and a chance for your many listeners to hear about my book and my story. Thank you again.
You're welcome.
Looking forward.
It is indeed a pleasure to have you. Kind of share with us a little bit about where you're from and how this all got started for you.
Well, I was born in Galveston, Texas, December 8, 1950. Went into jail for about 3 years and a month in a small town called Hitchcock. About 15 miles in, I was Galveston, it's an island off the Gulf Coast, about 50 miles from Houston. And I grew up in a small town with a mother, father, great family, and eventually ended up by high school living in Washington, D.C. for 10 years, and then came back to Texas briefly. Went to LA for 4 days in 79, and stayed there for 10 years. Came back to this in 89. And I've always been interested in life and people. I drove a city bus in D.C. to Houston and Los Angeles. I did things with my art. I had art published in major magazines. And so, of course, you get to meet a lot of different people and be aware of a lot of different situations and all, which is all set up to be well as an author.
Yes. Kind of take us into the journey where you have been able to turn that lemon of life into lemonade in regards to the situation with your health as well as the addiction that you overcame.
Well, I'm bisexual. I'm a great-grandfather, one daughter, two grandsons, four great-granddaughters. I would have had a son about 21, but his mother lost him in a car accident before he was born. But when I came back to Texas in 89, I found out that I was HIV positive. And, of course, at that time, people were dying left and right.
Yes.
Very frightening situation. And although I've grown up in a great family, been to Europe from 1972 to 1990 in 2 months, and went to the White House prom, 1975, during the Ford administration, through a relationship I got involved with crack cocaine in L.A. That brought my addiction back to Texas with me. In fact, Mary Harper, I joined a party at her house for a caterer when I first went to L.A., and she was serving breakfast on a parking lot downtown L.A., and told her I'd been to her house and told her what was going on, and she told me to get on the phone, call my mom and go home. So I called her and thanked her years later for saving my life. But anyway, I was in my addiction for the next 5 years in denial. In 94, I went into rehab and got tested again because everybody I knew was still a dead. I did not make a mistake, so I decided if I only had 2 more years to live, I wanted to live it clean and sober. And as of April 4th, I have 25 years clean and sober.
Awesome.
And I'm taking care of myself, and it's just been an incredible journey. Life is full of exciting adventures. I'm legally blind, but I was in England and Scotland in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
I went out on my own in London, but the Kensington Palace, where Princess Diana lived, and Edinburgh, Scotland.
Wow.
The Stonehenge.
Wow.
And in England. So I'm letting everything stop me. In fact, I forget I'm blind.
One of the things that you'll enjoy about the McGirt Show, Louisville Media, is we are celebrating 15 years on the air and with over 300,000 people who listen to us each week, who get the opportunity to hear people's story from across the country and around the world. And that's one of the things that we will always celebrate, the fact that it's empowering, enriching, enlightening for people worldwide, all over the world, for black, white, all races, all sexualities, gay, bi, DL, straight, the religious, the non-religious, whatever the case may be, married, single, divorced, widowed, it's there to empower you and encourage you. And that's one of the things that as we do this special Pride edition today, we celebrate that awesome uniqueness about the McGirt Show, of the beautiful listeners and sponsors and advertisers that have checked us out and stood with us ever since we've been on the air. We want to say thank you. Let's go back into the interview now.
Mm-hmm. Walk off and leave my stick all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I work what I do have and not what I don't have.
Yes.
And this book is an incredible adventure for me. I'm so happy that it's been so well received.
Yes.
They were really, really connected with the characters. And
And I love how you share with the listeners how you refuse to allow.
So many people don't get the chance to share what they've been through and overcame and the opportunity to encourage us, like we give that to our listeners and guests here on the show. And that's the beautiful part about it. We give you that opportunity. If you're a guest on the McGirt Show, you come on and you share what you have been through and what you have dealt with that will encourage somebody who may never have met you or know you. Now let's go back into the show already in progress.
Out the cane to limit you, because you often take off and leave the cane to let you know, look, you won't lose your independence. So I think that's wonderful, because the listeners need to hear that. They need to draw that positive energy, because we have a lot of listeners who they give up so easily and they need somebody to help cheer them on, and I thank you for doing that.
Now, cane is not in my vocabulary.
There you go. There you go. There you go. What is your dream list of people that you would like to have an opportunity to see this and read this wonderful book or get this book in front of?
Well, of course, because I wrote it, I'm naturally prejudiced against and biased in favor of it.
Yes.
But the book came out in December 2014, and I assure you, there's 5-star reviews on Amazon and 1 5-star review for Amazon UK. When I was in Edinburgh, Scotland, I met a woman who was a playwright in London, and Sharon Spice, she thought it would be a great British TV miniseries.
Mm-hmm.
She and her sister loved it. So it's not my opinion, but just the feedback I've gotten from people in every social economic demographic, old white women, old white men, development of what I wrote.
Mm-hmm.
But I would love to get the book into the hand of somebody who could really, really make it a movie that could really go on to win the Oscar. Sometimes I say it's Color Purple, which wait to exhale with a touch of moonlight. But people say they've never read anything like it before, so I would love for Lee Daniels to read it. Love for Oprah to get a hold of it. Certainly Barry Jenkins, who did Moonlight and Bill Street could talk. I'd love to see him, what he could do with the screenplay for it. Of course, Regina King, she's really become a powerhouse in movies. And of course, Hollywood's finding out that black movies can make money. But the story, the character I have, a woman person, Steve Rodney McCoy, he's a British director. But even though the book is primarily dealing with black characters, the storylines and the emotions are universal. Anybody, everybody can relate to homophobia. Which are killing kids these days because of the things that the church is saying. One of the highest suicide rates are among kids, and certainly black kids and in the LGBT community. Bullying. Certainly no stories of kids being commit suicide or because they're bullied at school and not much doing about it. Domestic violence certainly is horrible. I think every few minutes a woman is beaten or killed by her husband or boyfriend.
Yes.
And it's not just an heterosexual, but same-sex situation. I have known personally myself that sort of thing. It was forced us to get out of it with my fantasy and my life. Drug addiction. I grew up in a great family. I've been to Europe, been to college, to a relationship in L.A. In 85, I got involved with crack cocaine. I was just coming out then. I had no idea that the destruction. But again, as of April 4th, I have 25 years. And it's still evolving and coming around. But I'd love to walk down the red carpet with you interviewing me to get the Oscar.
Yes.
Or, bless you.
It would be an honor. Can I share with the listeners, because I like how you share your story as a bisexual man, what was your telltale revelation experience that you knew you were no longer just a heterosexual man, and how did it all come about?
I think from an early age, even before I knew anything about sex, like, for example, my older brother and sister used to take me to the movies all the time, and it was a movie with, I think, part of us on Sal Mineo. But in this movie, his name was Len. And when I was in first grade, my teacher would advance me. Every time I finished a book, she'd take me on a long tunnel, a more difficult book. But occasionally, I just wanted to go home. So I could close my eyes and see Les' face in my mind, and he was so beautiful, so handsome, it would kiss my eyes. She would call my mom, she'd come and get me, and I'd stay in bed for like 2 seconds, and my love story, I was good at it. So, again, that showed me years later that even though I knew nothing about homosexuality or same-sex attractions, I already had a love for the male form. It's something I always liked girls too. I love women. I love being with women. It was never on the down low. I always told my girlfriends that I like men, and I always told my boyfriends that I like women. I had a 50-year open relationship with my friend David Bridges. We were married for 4 years, and I was 17 when I met him. He was 33, so he recently passed at 83. In Maryland, he called West. I love living in Galveston.
Mm-hmm.
And an incredible long-term relationship, and just opened up the world to me because living in D.C. with the international community, I mean, not only going to the White House prom, but had an argument with ambassador to South Africa about apartheid, dinner with Luther King, put the sign on the side of cigarettes about warning about the dangers of cigarette smoking. It's a wide range of experiences, what I think all come into play to make me the kind of writer that I am.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. What is the takeaway that you want the readers to have after reading this book, Two Left Shoes?
Certainly to understand that and still be educated and aware and activist about social situations. I played for a table I had the center ball with the naked women, but at the same time, very, very intellectual, deep articles. And so that's how I want my books to be about. I want to bring awareness. And certainly not just reporting these things, but actually go inside the kids to feel what they're feeling, to feel this thing, and know a way of connecting with these issues that they've previously been allowed to do or able to do.
Mm-hmm.
People talk about my kids when they talk about it with me, as if these are real people from right around the corner. And I love that I've been able to write that kind of book. Always just described as an internal writer. I don't just report, I write from the inside of my characters,
mm-hmm.
which people are able to connect with.
Mm-hmm.
And so if this is done right as a movie, it will win the Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
So shout out to the people I mentioned,
mm-hmm.
and even Spielberg, who did Color Purple.
Mm-hmm.
Read this book, let's see what we can do with it.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this, what was that light bulb moment that made you realize, I need to write this book, and where were you when it happened? Kind of take us into that.
Endless story. Irma Mayfield is a professor at Galveston College, and I was in the frozen food section at Walmart one day, and I met this woman, and she told me she was a teacher at the college, and she did reading and writing and stuff like that, and so she gave me her number, so I put it in the drawer. And for several years, I was responding to the phone number and put it back. Then one day I decided to call. And at that moment, she was just starting a creative writing class at the college, at Galveston College. And so I enrolled. I'd written essays and poems and things like that before, but I'd never actually taken the endeavor to write a book. And through her class, I wrote Two Left Shoes.
Okay.
And she never taught me what to write or how to write, but she was so encouraging, and I felt like a spiritual guide. And to say she is literally proper. She goes to book club meetings with me. I'm about 20 chapters of fiction. The sequel was They'll Be Free. The second book is called Lane Change. And just awesome, awesome, awesome. I think I'm going to have a YouTube video coming up soon. His name is Heidi Tran. Wants to interview me for that. And I think it's going to be good for all of us. But yeah, that was the thing. I met Irma May Phillips, Professor Phillips, who's working on her doctorate right now. And that was a game changer.
Mm-hmm.
Without her, in that class, I may never have taken the chance of writing this book. And it turned out well. And really, actually, really a lot of writers write. I actually wrote this from the first chapter to the end, straight through.
Mm-hmm.
I read it from the beginning to where I was, and then instinctively I would know what character needed to be brought up next and what situations to be brought up. And people say it's a page turner, they are surprised, they never didn't know what's going to happen next, and it keeps their interest.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping people get the book and also, post reviews on Amazon for me.
Gotcha, gotcha. Do you have a favorite part of the book, a favorite chapter? And if so, what is it?
Yeah. Chapter 15.
Okay.
Eric, I just called his grandmother, Ms. Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
I know she was dying of cancer. She had 30 months to live, and one of those gone already. He went home to visit his sister. She had raised him. And he had a real resentment against his father, who he felt had abandoned him because of a traumatic tragedy early in life, which meant his family had raped him. And so she was talking to him about forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
She said, all our lives we go to funeral.
Mm-hmm.
Santa and Mary, how good they look. Just like they sleep, they go home the way I turn.
Mm-hmm.
Life is short. Forgive, otherwise you're just as dead inside as they are. I mean, this is like really an Oprah moment. I can just hear Oprah saying that line.
Mm-hmm.
It's about about forgiveness, and life is short, and people do the best they can with what they have. But that's my favorite chapter. And sorry, I'm not going to give you away, but the very end of that chapter, even though I wrote it, I have to cry every time I read it.
Wow.
I would love to see that on screen.
Yes, yes. Now, let me ask you this. Out of all the characters in the book, which character you believe or know or feel is most like you, personally?
And all of them are bits and pieces of me, but I would think, well, my four characters with personal at the galley, they all think Lisa.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I've never identified as a woman, even though I'm gay or bisexual,
mm-hmm.
but Lisa is very much touched with her sexuality, her sexual side. She's not restricted by slut shaming. At the same time, she's very, very socially conscious and a devoted friend to her friend. When she found out one of her friends was HIV positive, and the friend if people see you with me, won't they be think that maybe you have it too? And she said no, she used an expletive.
Mm-hmm.
And then they better go and get their own acid tested.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of worrying about what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so again, I like to deal with the stigma attached to it. Not only the stigma of people who know they have it but won't tell their partners, also the stigma from the other side, which is that people won't get tested.
Mm-hmm.
But they won't take medical attention because they're afraid of what people will say.
Mm-hmm.
But I decided early on that I could go to any hospital in the world to find somebody with some other disease, other than HIV or AIDS,
mm-hmm.
and they will not be here in the morning. Of course, the medicine is so good today.
Mm-hmm.
I'm undetectable, which means I'm medically cured. I have so little of the virus in my system, I can't give it to anybody. We've gone a long way from these people dying. Within 6 months after they found out back in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And so I use it as a platform also to help people accept and find out that, hey, there's nothing you can do for whatever your challenge is, whether it's HIV, whether it's bullying, whether it's drug addiction, a handicap, or disability like being legally blind.
Mm-hmm. I had the awesome opportunity to hear your story in regards to how you overcame your drug addiction, and I want you to take time to share with the listeners out there who are dealing with that same issue. I want to congratulate you on being a champion of overcoming that, and I think people need to hear how or whatever it was that helped you overcome, because you have a lot of people who run in and out of rehab, and they can do that all day long if they don't make up their mind to do what you have done to combat the addiction. Then they're going to keep going to rehab, and it's going to be a revolving doing, going back doing the same thing when they get back out of rehab. Share with them how you fought.
My thing is that if I were a pimp, and one of my best girls, and there'll be so many years, and she decided, well, I don't want to do this anymore. I want to become a nurse. Am I going to tell her, okay, go on and, you know, I'm going to do everything I can to keep her.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with Slade.
Mm-hmm.
When they escaped from NASA, they did not turn around and say, okay, I'm tired of the swamp, so I don't want freedom, I'm going to go back. Same thing with addiction. It's going to do everything it can to keep you,
mm-hmm.
keep you in denial. And I see it as an abusive relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Beats you behind, promises never to do it again. You hear that lie, you fall for it again, you go back. And so, I was in county jail,
mm-hmm.
waiting to go to District 1 TCC drug treatment program for 9 months in 1994. And I, no offense to white people, but I decided, I don't know if those white people know what they're doing or not, but I know what I was doing was not working. This was not where I was raised to be. And so I made a choice to never, ever do that again and to work hard. And I still go to meetings. And I say, you need a ticket to go to a movie theater. You need a ticket to go to a concert. So my recovery, my sobriety, extraordinary life and it's still unfolding. And I mean, I know kind of boy from Hitchcock, Texas, going to the White House. Fully expecting that I've written a book so good it could easily be an Oscar-winning film.
Mm-hmm.
So I can never see relapsing. I spent a great deal of my time and energy helping people who are in recovery. I got a friend right now. I did a video chat yesterday. He now owns his own construction company.
Mm-hmm.
Just moving from Hawaii to the Virgin Islands. And he was thanking me so much for all that I did for him that I put on my wings. And so there was a time when I had 9 people sleeping on my living room floor, black, white, Mexican, men, women. They didn't know each other, but somebody told them that the man who lived in Galveston, if they just got to his door, he would let you in. You couldn't do any drugs in his house. You couldn't drink any alcohol. But if you won't eat a bunch of steak, food to eat, he will take you in.
Wow.
And I swear, I understand the whole thing, but Jesus said the 5 fish and 2 loaves of bread.
Mm-hmm.
I was on a big income, but we never miss breakfast, lunch, or dinner.
Mm-hmm.
The lights never got cut off. The gas never got cut off. The cable never got cut off. I don't know. It had to be a God thing.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them stole from me. And some of them made it. And I don't think about the ones who didn't make it, the ones who stole from me. I don't really think about the ones who did. And I'm so grateful that I could be a part of their lives. But I just gave them an opportunity, and they did the rest of the work themselves.
Mm. Wow.
I got the Martin Luther King Jr. Award in 07 and the Gatekeeper Award in 2012 for my activities in Galveston with HIV/AIDS and substance abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And they even put on a play, raised over $5,000, put on a play at UCB that was free to the public about a black family dealing with AIDS in 08.
Mm-hmm.
I think theater is a great way to educate.
Right, right. What would you say to the person out there who's battling addiction would be the daily routine that they need to do to stay off of drugs or to combat or overcome the addiction? What would you share with them?
Understand that gray matter between your brain is not your friend.
Okay.
Do not listen to anything it's saying because it will keep you in pain and misery. Put one foot in front of the other, go to rehab, get your life together, and never, ever, ever allow yourself to pick that up again, because once you do, it will get you again and keep you down and kill you. I have family members who are still addicted. I have close friends around here. A roommate of mine recently had been clean himself for 7 years and relapsed and stole my TV. But he's trying to do for himself right now. It's far more forward than anything I can do it to him. So I had to put him out and hurt.
Mm-hmm.
But the best tough love is the best love.
Yes.
But yeah, give yourself a chance. You only live once. Life is short. See what be knows about you. Be knows about what can happen to you next.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it's going to be difficult at first. But the first time you tried to walk, you fell down and bust your behind.
Okay.
Now you walk where you want to walk.
Right.
So difficulty is not a reason not to do it. And now I'm very comfortable, and I love my sobriety, and hey, I wouldn't have been able to meet you and do what we're doing today if it had not been for me being clean and sober.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Are there some powerful steps that can help people fast track to getting clean, even if you don't have the resources to go to rehab or not able to get to rehab or there may not be a rehab facility nearby? What would you say those would be?
Well, I think, first of all, there are, for those who live in the rural areas, there are online meetings.
Okay.
But I had an IQ of 151, which was like in the low genius range. And I was not smart enough to do it on my own.
Okay.
I recommend rehab, and trust me, there are a lot of facilities that you don't need any money.
Oh, great.
Just reach out, go online, Google, would just say his father is in his 60s and seriously addicted to meth. And he is off in North Carolina actually doing a roofing job. But he won't come and get me when he gets back. And hopefully, pray that I can get through to his father. I don't know that I can. I'll do my best. But you have to want it.
You gotta want it.
Nobody can want it for you. You have to do it for yourself, not for your children, not for your mom, not for your daddy. You have to do it for yourself. There are resources out there. Call an addiction hotline and get some advice of where you can go. Here in Galveston, we have the Gulf Coast Center, which you're going for intake and assessment.
Mm-hmm.
You can get an outpatient or inpatient. It's worth it.
Yes.
It's really, really worth it. There is help out there. You don't have to live in this pain. And trust me, it is pain.
Who is your greatest inspiration growing up as well as an adult, as you pursued your journey and got into writing this book?
I'll say my mother and my father.
Okay.
My mother was a very beautiful woman. She passed away in 94. Beautiful compared to Lena Horne.
Mm-hmm.
And but she was fiery and passionate and fed the neighborhood and combed the girl's hair and everything. No matter who came by, there was always Udi. And so that's where my nature for helping people. And my father was very, very quiet and full of wisdom and thoughtful. And so I'd like to think that both my mother and my father, both of them, Mr. Stovall, he was a biology teacher and art teacher in college, in high school.
Mm-hmm.
He was a big influence. He really got me into art, and I was very good at that. One man shows in D.C. and the Houston Grand Hotel about a piece of my work, and I had art from the Design Quest and all sorts of things like that. But really, but as far as LGBT, Alan Turing was a guy in Britain, in England, during World War II, and the Germans had a machine called the Enigma machine, and it changed the code every day. And this man built a computer as big as a wall and was cracked the code and hastened the end of World War II, but he was gay, and he ended up committing suicide because he was forced to be chemically castrated. But the other guy was Brian Rustin. He was Dr. King's right-hand man. He brought the whole idea of nonviolent resistance from Gandhi in India. He was the chief organizer of the 1963 March on Washington. Nobody knows about him because he was an openly gay man. And so when people in religious society and others kill the spirit of children who are LGBT, you are possibly killing somebody who could find a cure to cancer or go to the moon or anything. So because God is not discriminate about who he gives a gift to.
Mm-hmm.
We all are created equally in his sight. And this thing I tell people, I don't mean to get into religion, but nowhere in the Bible does God himself say anything about homosexuality. It's the only document that he himself wrote was the Ten Commandments. It's not there, and nowhere does Jesus ever say anything about it. There are other people that say things about it, but not God, not Jesus. So why does he say that he hates us? I don't know. But when I go to Walmart, I don't buy gay milk. I don't buy gay gas. My tax money goes in with everybody else.
That's a good point. How, you know, at the end of the day, and we often share that same sentiment here at the McGirt Show, the journey is still the same. There's nobody that's immune from not needing food, water, a place to stay, clothes to wear, car to drive, health care, transportation. The journey and the needs are the same. You know,
that's universal issue. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's something we all when the air is really bad.
That's right.
We all are suffering to breathe.
That's
so
right.
Let's work together. It's like the, there's a country now that decided that they're going to stone adulterers and homosexuals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that part of the country is like the Dark Ages.
Mm-hmm.
And here, we just had the mayor of Chicago,
mm-hmm.
of Edison Ware, and we even have a candidate for the presidency.
Mm-hmm.
Buttigieg.
Yes.
YouTube.com/TheMcGirt,
as well as Facebook.com, Bobby Dale McGirt, Instagram, The McGirt Show, LinkedIn, Twitter, Bobby Dale McGirt. I'm all over the place. And tune in again and be empowered, enriched, and enlightened. Have a wonderful day.